Mobile Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we have a conversation with Bill Miller, the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association, on a wide range of topics as we run up to the revitalized G2E to be held in October. This week's podcast is sponsored by IGT with its newest MLP theme, Prosperity Link. It's a hit and performing at over three times versus house, according to the Eilers June report. Learn more at igt.com/prosperity. The gaming industry is about to publish record revenues for 2022. There are storm clouds on the horizon, and the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association, Bill Miller, has his antenna up. Whether it's higher gas prices or soaring inflation, he believes the industry will endure, however, because it showed amazing resiliency during the pandemic. He talks about the issues that are important to the industry, such as illegal gambling, whether it be online or in convenience stores, human trafficking, and a possible smoking ban. He spoke with me at the AGA offices in Washington, D.C. in July. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Bill Miller, the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association. Bill, it's great to see you again. You know, we've done this a couple of times virtually over the pandemic, but it's great to get back together with you again.
Roger, first of all, I appreciate the partnership and very much appreciate being with you and actually hosting you here in our offices in Washington, D.C.
Well, it's always great to come, except on a middle of a summer day when it's 95 degrees out.
And 100% humidity.
Exactly,
so, yeah.
Right. No, it's, we know heat in Vegas, but we don't know humidity. So
You're getting full dose of it today.
Absolutely, right. So let's talk about what's happened since the pandemic has wound down here. Gaming just had a record-breaking year revenue-wise. It looks like 2022 will surpass that even. But of course, now we have this shadow of inflation rolling over us, higher gas prices. People may not be as willing to drive to the casino as much as they have been in the past. How should the industry respond to these kind of real-world concerns?
Well, first, I think it is important to kind of remember where we just came from, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we came from the nadir.
Right.
The absolute 989 casinos all across America, every single one of them shut down for months.
Yep.
You know, furloughs of tens of thousands of people. You know, no area in the country probably more badly affected than Nevada and Las Vegas. But, you know, we're in, 44 states and literally, every one of these communities were negatively impacted, both from tax perspective, from an economic perspective, and to see where we've come from that to what we are really pre-pandemic numbers in terms of GGR, certainly in the commercial space. And I talk to the tribal guys all the time, and they say the same things that the bounce back has been extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
But you also mentioned a couple of things that are really important and really, they're clouds on the horizon.
Sure, sure.
And they include things like supply chain and labor shortage and interest rates and kind of where are we as an economy and, the inflation and gas prices, particularly as it relates to regional casinos. So I think that, if I were to look at the world today, remembering what the world looked like in the dark days of 2020, extraordinarily great.
Sure,
but we have to be at least concerned a little bit about the overall state of the economy and what does it mean for our industry.
Sure, absolutely, and with the expansion of gaming, the interest rates have to be a little worrying. Even when you look at some of the consolidation that we know is coming in the sports betting field, I mean that's got to impact that a little bit.
I think that what you've always seen in this industry is that there has always been expansion into new segments and competition and then consolidations and M&A. And I think you see it in really all business here in America.
Right.
But I think in the gaming industry and as it relates to sports betting and fintech and a number of these kind of cutting edge pieces of our business, I think it's natural to see some consolidation in the next couple of years.
Sure, sure. Well, let's talk about sports betting. I think this is certainly the capstone of your time at the AGA. I think without the lobbying and the information you put out, on a daily basis, in at the heat of the
of the legalization process, it wouldn't have happened. How gratified are you that so many states have actually legalized iGaming or sports betting up until this point?
Look, I've spent most of my life in either government or advising government, lobbying government, working on campaigns and that sort of thing, and I've never seen anything move quite as quickly as this.
Right.
You know, we're now legal in 35 states plus the District of Columbia, operational in 30. Mm-hmm. And to think about, you know, it was May of 2018 that the Supreme Court ruled.
Right.
And to see that much happen so quickly, it has been really gratifying.
Yeah.
And I think importantly, it's been gratifying to see, you know, a number of the players that aligned in this space and some that didn't. And some that kind of evolved their thinking around what does sports betting mean? Is it a threat? Is it an opportunity?
Yeah.
Is it something that's a positive or something that is a challenge? And I think that what we've seen is excited. You know, we've seen politicians recognizing that their constituents have been betting on sports for decades. The question is whether they think it's a good thing for them to be protected, the consumer to be protected. And I think that they've reacted positively.
Sure, no question. Some states, though, really haven't gotten the memo when it comes to, you know, making the operating environment, you know, comfortable and potentially profitable for the companies with the high tax rates, high fees to join, and some regulatory hurdles as well. Is this going to be a problem in the long run?
Well, I think that one of the things that is important is to think about what we have been able to get right. What we've, by and large, been able to get right is that, you know, the states have recognized that there is an illegal market out there, and that, you know, particularly when you're talking about mobility, you have to create a product that gets the consumer to move away from the illegal market into the legal market, and that involves tax rate and regulation and some of the other issues. We need to make sure that we're providing a safe alternative to the legal market that provides taxes and jobs and consumer protections. But part of that is what's the government's role there? And if they tax it too high, the bettor's going to stay in the illegal market.
Right.
And that's the thing that we've, by and large, been successful with a couple of exceptions.
Okay. We just saw New York officials bragging about how much tax revenue they got, and of course that means they had a lot of bets coming in as well. Do you think they're being a little premature in celebrating how much they're going to profit off of this?
Well, I think that what they saw in the early days when New Jersey was legal and they weren't, that they saw New Yorkers you know, taking the path across the you know, the river into Jersey City and Hoboken and other places in order to place bets. And so they've arrested that.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And, you know, I think that probably New Yorkers, you know, New York politicians recognize that it's better to keep that money within the boundaries of the state. But bettors become pretty sophisticated over time.
Right.
And when they see that because of the high tax rate that the operators within that state are either curtailing their operations or investing in other jurisdictions, the success, you know, that short-lived success may be a reality going forward. And I think that's unfortunate. And so my hope is that, you know, New York has been talking about, you know, downstate casinos, additional opportunities for expansion, and that my hope is that during that period of time, we'll have an opportunity collectively as an industry to help inform those legislators in Albany about, you know, the competitive nature of the industry and what happens when you make the tax rates prohibitive.
Okay. So, you know, obviously one of the goals of legalizing sports betting was to eliminate or at least lessen the influence of illegal sports betting. We just had several congressmen from the Congressional Gaming Caucus send a bill to the Attorney General. Do you think that's the way to go?
My view is the illegal market, whether it's skill-based machines or offshore online websites, are corrosive, and they don't offer any consumer protections. They certainly don't offer any ability to create taxes that help fund social services and those sorts of things. They don't help with jobs or community development and support for the communities. And so we should be doing everything in our collective power to try and weaken and destroy the illegal market. Okay. And so the, you know, the letter that I sent to the Attorney General, highlighting these two important illegal areas, the offshore and the skill-based machines, was an intent to begin a dialogue with federal law enforcement. And we have had that dialogue at the FBI level. We've had that dialogue with U.S. attorneys across the country. I was just in Boston at Nickel G's speaking on this very subject. I think that we're going to continue to press this issue because it is critically important that we do everything that we can to protect the consumer and protect the legal regulated industry against people that don't play by the rules.
Sure. Would it make more sense, however, to go through the State Department? A lot of these companies are based in little small countries that get lots of U.S. aid. You know, have them go to the leader of their country and say, hey, kick this guy out or you're going to get less aid.
That's pretty direct. Trust me, I've talked about this with my team. I've talked about this with folks over at the State Department. You know, can we get them to prioritize this? Look, we have bilateral trade agreements with many of these countries. And putting this in as a priority issue, I think so far has been somewhat difficult. But it is on the list. I think the list is a exhaustive one to try and do everything that we can to, at every opportunity, shut them down. And that's what we're going to do.
Great. So there's been a lot of pushback in the U.S. on sports betting advertising. It's not quite as bad as DFS was a few years ago, but you know it's getting on people's nerves, particularly nerves of legislatures and things of that nature. You know, Europe is now in full bore eliminating sports betting advertising. Should the industry get together and kind of agree that maybe we need to back up a little bit?
Well, I think there are some challenges there. I share your concern about, you know, the amount of advertising. I think that what we saw last fall particularly was that, you know, there was a heavy push to move people. Again, it's important to remember, people have been betting on sports as long as there have been sports to bet on. They've all been betting on it illegally up until PASPA was repealed. And so advertising is an important vehicle to move the bettor who, and we've done surveys that say that the bettors by and large thought they were betting on legal websites. And even though they weren't. And so now, how do you move that bettor from an illegal website to the legal marketplace? Advertising is an important piece to this. So we're working on it. I understand that, you know, in the early parts of the NFL and college football season, you know, they were on all the time. I've got two little boys, one's 7, one's 8. They see these ads all the time, and they want to know where their free money is. And so, you know, and so, look, we have a responsible marketing code and for advertising for all members of the AGA, and we believe that they are abiding by that. It's a new market vertical. We have to kind of move people. We have to create a legal marketplace, and advertising is an important component to that. Then you combine that with, you know, I'm not the boss of these companies, and while there may be a shared concern about, you know, advertising, prevalence of advertising, etc., there's also two important pieces. One is, you know, antitrust in order, and that prevents, you know, an organization like ours or a collective of companies to, you know, collectively decide what they want to do around advertising and or marketing. And then two, there's the First Amendment. And so the First Amendment allows for commercial speech. And so I believe that the advertising itself has been appropriate. The advertising subject matter has been appropriate. Has it been, you know, too much at times? Yeah, maybe, but we also saw after the fourth week of the NFL season that it declined. And so I do not think that we are heading down the road towards Italy, Spain, UK, Australia, name your cautionary tale. My view is that our advertisers and our operators have RG baked into them, and that we will avoid the pitfalls that others have.
Okay, great.
The cat's out of the bag. IGT's newest MLP theme, Prosperity Link, is a hit and performing at over triple versus House, according to Eilers' June report. Both partner themes feature the player favorite lock and respin bonus and the exciting free games bonus with either scatter or multiplier wilds. Prosperity Link will drive players to your floor with its popular game mechanics. Grab this exciting game while it's hot. Learn more at igt.com/prosperity.
I was talking to a lot of these online gaming operators, and they say, how can you, you know, agree to these huge tax rates when it comes to sports betting? And most of them said to me that if you're not in that state with sports betting, you don't get in with iGaming, and iGaming obviously is more profitable, lower margins, that kind of thing. A lot of the states that have legalized sports betting aren't really yet considering iGaming. Is the AGA going to take any kind of role to kind of go to bat for iGaming at any point?
Well, I think it's up to the states, mm-hmm. and it's up to the operators. Right. I think what we've seen over time, and COVID showed this, was that iGaming, in some respects, was a lifeline for right. brick and mortar companies. And so there's been an evolution among operators within the industry, mm-hmm. and an evolution among stakeholders, including political stakeholders, in capitals as they wrestled around with sports betting.
Right.
You've still only got 6 or 7 states that have operationalized iGaming,
right.
which is far less than 35 states plus D.C.
Sure.
for sports betting. And I think that there has been a combination of the individual stakeholders that have important equities within those states that weigh in mm-hmm. with those state capitals.
Right.
And say, well, you know, I don't know that iGaming is for me, and I'm a heavy employer in your state,
yeah.
or I have made, you know, huge amounts of capital investment in your state, and so I'm not comfortable with iGaming today. And then politicians might say, I'm okay with moving sports betting, but I might not be okay with iGaming.
Yeah.
And so my view is that sports betting is an opportunity to kind of open up mobility,
mm-hmm.
and iGaming is, you know, is a casino experience in via mobile.
Right.
So I think that we will see a continued increase.
Mm-hmm.
I think our membership is open. I think that the omni-channel experience that brick and mortar companies mm-hmm. have, I think, become kind of commonplace
sure.
in terms of their views has been. Look, I may be able to get somebody to visit my property 5 or 10 times a year, but I'd sure like to communicate with them, you know, via mobile and via technology
sure.
about what do they care about food, what mm-hmm. do they care about music acts,
right.
sports betting,
mm-hmm.
and iGaming. And so I think that omni-channel experience is something that the industry is moving towards, and I think that it's a natural evolution that we will continue to play a role.
Sure. Okay. Great. So obviously you mentioned RG. That's obviously become much more out front with the legalization of sports betting. But we just have a piece that's going to run in our August issue from Art Pykowski from the International mm-hmm. Center for Responsible Gaming, a group that AGA helped to form back in the day. And Art is saying that we need a lot more research. I mean, a lot of these problem gambling organizations are saying we're getting a lot more calls. But he said, does that really equate? I mean, we don't know whether that equates to more problem gambling. Because studies haven't been done. Do you think there really needs to be way more studies being done on sports gamblers?
I do.
Yeah.
I think there is not enough research, scientific-based research mm-hmm. on, what does technology mean
right.
to RG? What mm-hmm. are the impacts around payment modernization, something
right.
that I've championed? Loyalty programs and the dynamic that includes mobility, sports betting, and increased offerings.
Mm-hmm.
I think we absolutely need more academic research, more
sure.
health behavioral scientists
mm-hmm.
in this. And so I share Art's view, and I'm honored to sit on ICRG's board, and I do believe that them. Leading and creating opportunities via grants and others
mm-hmm.
is long overdue.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. So, and speaking of iGaming, you know, most major gaming companies have some pretty rich, detailed RG programs. But unfortunately, they're not all alike, and some of them are kind of very different than others. Does there need to be some sort of industry standard, kind of a minimum standard for RG programs, that so there's at least some element of togetherness, I guess I'd say.
Well, I'm relatively new to the industry, mm-hmm. but the Reno model, which was right. kind of built around mm-hmm. a collaborative effort between I think led and brought together right. by Phil Satre, who was then right. CEO yep. of Caesars and Harvard, and, mm-hmm. and a number of other both academics, people that were in the problem gambling space, to come together to talk about mm-hmm. what should be a right. blueprint or standards for employee training and right. for better understanding of what are the symptoms and of the signs of problem mm-hmm. gambling. And I think that has been incorporated. And I think that, yes, different states have different requirements. Different states have, both tax and, required monies that are set aside. The RG and PG, or problem gambling space, has probably never been better funded.
Right. Sure.
It doesn't speak to the question that you asked a minute ago, which is, do we think there should be more research done to better yeah. understand, in a modern technological world,
right.
what are the risks? I do think that is very important to revisit in sure. a much more comprehensive way. But my view is that, as it relates to responsible gaming, it is in our DNA.
Right.
It is why the U.S. population, the U.S. consumer, views this industry favorably. Mm-hmm. And it's different from Spain. It's right. different from Italy. It's
right.
different from the U.K. It's different from Australia. And that's intentional. And that is, we're not seen as predatory. We're seen as a good community partner. We're seen as a great and fun alternative for people to spend their discretionary entertainment dollars.
Okay. So the AGA just launched an initiative on human trafficking, and I admit that I'm pretty guilty. Didn't know that this was happening so frequently in the casino industry, and now that I've seen some of the facts, it's woken me up, and it's very, very important that you did this. What kind of led you into this decision to form this task force?
I will say this, that I had a number of regulators mm-hmm. that had brought this up. I think about Ronnie Jones, former head of the Gaming Control Board of Louisiana. This was a passionate issue for him. Mm-hmm. The guy who hired me, the former chairman of the AGA, Tim mm-hmm. Wilmot, this right. was an issue that he cared deeply about. Many of the member companies have said, look, we're a part of the hospitality industry.
Right.
And in the hospitality industry, sex trafficking, human trafficking, exists.
Sure.
And so we need to take a leadership role here. Mm-hmm. And so, I have a great team within the AGA that's committed to this. National Human Trafficking Month is January. We launched in September. We launched this initiative. We released some principles just a couple weeks ago in Boston mm-hmm. in conjunction with the Nicolgees Conference. And I think that it's a moral imperative for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's something that our companies companies want to lead on. The employees want to be better understand what are the signs of human trafficking.
Right.
And our role in being so consumer facing gives us an opportunity to really help try and knock this out.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So in New Jersey, there's a bill working its way through the legislature that would ban all smoking in Atlantic City casinos. Right now, there's a stipulation that allows them to have 25% of the floor dedicated to smoking, but apparently the employees are not real happy with it, certainly the casino employees and dealers. And as a former dealer myself, I can attest to it's not fun. But is there And we've seen some new data coming through where it doesn't really impact the operations, the revenue of a casino as it once used to. We've seen more studies coming out on that. Where's the AJ stand on that? I mean, are you going to, you know, back it or just hands off at this point?
Well, look, I, like you. I've spent a lot of my life in the entertainment space. Mm-hmm. I was a DJ in bars. Okay. I was a bartender. I waited tables and lived through all of those experiences in a time when smoking was permitted.
Right.
And at a time when smoking wasn't permitted. Mm-hmm. In bars and restaurants. And I think that, you know, as an employee, I was happy when that change mm-hmm. happened. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, my position is that, you know, we should right. have smoke-free casinos. Mm-hmm. I think that's up to the individual operators. It's up to the, you know, jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it is true that during COVID and then in the aftermath that there were operators that decided to, you know, because they were acquired, mm-hmm. to reopen smoke-free.
Right.
And then when they were no longer required to be smoke-free, they remained smoke-free mm-hmm. without being disadvantaged economically.
Right. Do you believe that, maybe we should study this a little more and find out, you know, why? You know, well, there was a survey done in the C3 piece recently where it said, you know, the importance of certain things to you when you go to a casino. And having a non-smoking casino was way up near the top, and having a smoking casino was way near the bottom. I mean, you know, and obviously there's a lot of revenue that comes from that that group at the bottom. But, you know, is it time to start considering it?
I think it's always time to revisit these things from mm-hmm. time to time. I don't want to get off subject here, but I think about, you know, I had an uncle who was the nicest man I have ever known. Mm-hmm. But when you talked about taking his cigarettes away as he went into a restaurant,
right.
man, it was the only thing that ever got that man upset. So I understand that little sliver is a small number, right. but they're pretty passionate.
They are very passionate, that's for sure. So let's talk about G2E Asia. You know,
sure.
Macau is going through such a terrible period now yeah. with, again, a lockdown. You guys have not put G2E Asia for a couple of years now. But now you're moving into Singapore for this year. Obviously, the reason for that was so people could come visit. Are you hoping to get a lot of those Macau executives to come down to Singapore and visit?
Well, I think it's certainly... China and Macau, it's a challenging time for a lot of different reasons, but certainly the zero COVID policy is difficult. You know, it's difficult, you
right.
know, as they shut down
sure.
the border, you know, whenever mm-hmm. there's any, even the smallest flare-ups.
Right.
And so we made the decision, you know, to move this show mm-hmm. just for this year
sure.
with the full intention of being back in Macau next year.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only was there desire in the Asia market to have a G2E Asia,
right.
but it was quite frankly impossible to move equipment in and out of Macau,
right.
and importantly, move individuals in and out of Macau who might come even
sure.
if we were able to get the machines there.
Right, right.
So the physical practicalities of having the show there was next to impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And so answering your question around, do we think that we'll have a lot of the Macau executives? I don't think so, because it's you know, the quarantine problems of coming back
right,
is
yeah.
the problem.
Right,
and
right.
so my hope is, my belief is that we'll have a modest show
mm-hmm.
in Singapore.
Yeah.
And that we'll continue to get better news
mm-hmm.
in China and in Macau, and that we'll see a strong show back in Macau next year.
Right. Well, there's so much to talk about in that part of the world when it comes yeah. to gaming, and not just the pandemic. I mean, the possible legalization of casinos in Thailand, the collapse of the VIP programs in Australia. I mean, there's all kinds of things to talk about, and so I think it's wise that you actually are going to hold it this year, whether or not the people from Macau can show up.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad that we weren't able to do it. It was, you know, we've tried really for the past couple of years to try and do it.
Right.
We've had great dialogue with number one, the, you know, the three big American operators that mm-hmm. are there. I talk to them often.
Sure.
And have had multiple communications with the office of of the CEO in right. Macau, and mm-hmm. making sure that they understand our commitment to Macau and G2E sure. as a part of that, mm-hmm. and that it's just regrettable that we're unable to do it.
Great,
this year.
Great. Well, let's talk about G2E.
Yeah.
Having gone to the, I'll call it Indian Gaming, but the Naiga show, it's gonna be a long time before I can make that change. But it was very exciting. There were people, a lot of people there. They were really enthusiastic about getting back together. And if that's any indication of how big G2E is going to be, it's really going to be a good show for you guys. What's your indication of how it's going to perform in Vegas?
Well, I think that we were really excited last year. Mm-hmm. It took a lot. You're dealing with not only the massive investments that the supplier manufacturers make
right.
to put a show on mm-hmm. on the floor
right.
and convincing them that there is an actual viable marketplace,
right.
not just the safety piece,
sure, right.
which is critical
yep.
and first, it has to be safe and a healthy environment mm-hmm. to put your own employees on the floor,
right.
and then you have to kind of say, okay, well, that's great, but what we're not trying to do is do a show that's a symbolism show.
Right.
We're trying to create an economic marketplace,
sure.
and a viable one.
Right.
And so we were really gratified to see what we were able to do last year mm-hmm. to be successful,
right.
and what we've seen so far this year, where we're probably already eclipsed our sales number in mm-hmm. terms of number of exhibitors mm-hmm. and floor space reserved and
right.
purchased. But now that we've opened up registration looks really, really good too. So mm-hmm. I have every expectation that we probably won't be a pre-pandemic high
mm-hmm.
For the G2E show, but remember what we didn't have last year.
Right.
We didn't have international
exactly.
visitation.
Right.
We had very little business travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so my view is we will have strong international visitation mm-hmm. this time. And we'll have business travel and notwithstanding some economic issues that are kind of these global issues that
sure.
we can't control,
mm-hmm.
We're seeing increased markets.
Yeah.
We're Virginia and Nebraska and some new markets, as well as people that had by and large held their CapEx spending on machines
right.
and that aperture is getting widened. And
yeah.
we think that that'll be a great benefit to the suppliers.
Great, great. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you there. It's always a great show, and you guys, I know you're putting together a great program, and we're looking forward to that being revealed sometime in the next month or so. So thanks for taking the time, Bill. It was great to see you again, and let's not wait as long next time to sit down together.
Absolutely.
In person.
I'd love to do it.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Roger.
Enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by IGT and its newest MLP theme, Prosperity Link. It's a hit and performing at over 3x Hat versus House. Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by IGT and its newest MLP theme, Prosperity Link. It's a hit and performing at over 3x versus House, according to the Eilers June Report. Discover more at IGT.com/prosperity. To learn more about the issues that concern the AGA and the entire industry, visit ggbmagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.